FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Good to have our buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio. Kennedy for Alabama tomorrow night. And a man that was burning the midnight oil on Tuesday, like Dalton and I and so many of us as we are watching the results come in on Super Tuesday. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing great.
Doing good.
Have you recovered yet?
Yeah, man. The next day, I was good to go. Looking at the results now from Super Tuesday. Let's talk about right here at home.
Okay.
We've got two runoffs, AL1 Democrat, AL1 Republican runoffs.
You know, it's interesting. Aquilin, my wife, and I were talking about this on Tuesday night, and I can't imagine going into a runoff and having to produce the energy to get yourself geared back up in order to keep pushing through to the 31st of March. But isn't that an amazing thing?
Yes.
That we have candidates that were that close on both sides of the aisle, and the fact that neither one of the front runners got over 50%. I just think that speaks to the level of talent that we have in this area, and the fact that the candidates, in this case, the final four, just did a fantastic job campaigning during the primary.
You know, something you've told us over the years and your experience in running for office, you're always saying, yeah, but you got to raise money. Yeah. But this, you know, you'll talk about debate performances. You'll say, well, this is valuable because of raising money.
Right.
So talking to the ones I've talked to so far that ran, you know, that are in the runoff, they've all said, yeah, I was like, you got a big, you know, got to get out and press the flesh and do more campaigning. They said, yes, and we have to raise money. Mm-hmm. That's like the first thing. So, I mean, they get themselves to this point, the finish line. It's almost like a reset. You got to start raising money again because a lot of people spent everything they had to get themselves to the primary.
And that's kind of the whole point, right? So it's like you don't want anything left in the tank when the competition is over. So the fact that you just have to gear back up and go to those folks who were able to contribute to you the first time and ask for them to contribute again.
Hey, remember me?
Yes, I'm back. Yes. And for the record, there were several aspects of campaigning for office that I absolutely loved, but there was one aspect of campaigning for office that I absolutely hated.
I'll give you
three guesses, but you're only going to need one.
I'm going to guess. Go out on a limb here. It has something to do with raising money.
Yes. It starts and ends with raising money.
But it's the mother's milk of politics.
Unless you're Mike Bloomberg.
Well, he had all the mamas, you know, and he had a whole dairy of milk there.
He did.
But this stat, Dalton talked about again this morning, I think, because I hear he spent how much?
$500 million was the last count I saw.
I hear that, and I see Robin Leach in my head, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, of all the stuff that would be acquired with that. But in reality, as a percentage of his wealth, that it was equivalent to what for the regular U.S. family?
Yeah, the stats I saw were that it was 1% of Bloomberg's wealth, and the average family somewhere around $680,000 net worth, and the median was right around $90,000. So they broke
the average family has how much net worth?
Well, from CNBC, they said $680,000.
You think the go in the Northeast, go in California, what their homes are worth? I mean, just regular. Mm-hmm. Well,
it seemed high to me as well.
I'll look that up and we'll.
Okay.
And the median was around $90,000.
Okay.
But they said that would be equivalent to a family spending about $7,000 on a campaign.
Okay. So because I hear $500 million, I'm like, oh my gosh, how's this guy ever going to recover? And they're saying it's about the average U.S. family spending $7,000, which is obviously a hit for folks. But there's a lot of people said, if I had to campaign for president, I spent $7,000. Yeah, I'm in. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in for the name ID.
Right.
But that's the $500 billion. I talked about this morning. That's what he spent on his own campaign. He was spending money and has to support Democrat candidates around the country in the past.
He did not support me, by the way.
He did not.
I did not get any Mike Bloomberg money when I ran for office. As a matter of fact, I'm still waiting for the DCCC to call me back from the last cycle.
If he's trying to push Democrat candidates in places where they haven't won, AL1 is a prime example.
Yep.
Huh. But he had spent money on that.
He
had spent money specifically for Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's back out and he's back behind Biden. So I guess he's going to start gathering money again.
But here's the way that I think I would tend to think of it, you know, from sitting in a Democratic chair, that I actually end up that being money well spent. So if you look at what the content of his communications were, it was primarily aimed at President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the exception of the last little bit at the end where it's Mike will get it done, Mike 2020, the message is the message that you do want to go into the airwaves because ultimately it creates a foundation that can potentially make Vice President Biden, if he's the nominee, Senator Sanders, if he's a nominee, have a foundation to build on going into the general.
Let me ask you, was Bloomberg's intention getting into this race, and now I know he's saying it was all about beating Trump, mm-hmm. was there any reason for him to jump in purely to defeat Sanders, to make sure Sanders doesn't get the Democrat nomination, or was this all about Trump?
No, I don't think of that at all. I actually think it was all about ego. And so, and I'll have to confess to my personal sins of the past as well on this topic. When I was sitting back in 2016, Election Day 2016, and saw that there was no Democrat who had run for office in AO1, that was the point I decided that I was going to do something. But as the special election came up and I started looking through videos of people who had run for office before, I was literally sitting there going, I can do that. Mm-hmm. And I think I can articulate a case as well as anybody on the Democratic side. And so what I believe was with Mike Bloomberg was simply ego, where it's like, I've got this money, I'm sitting on the sideline, I'm looking at the debate performances, I'm seeing what Vice President Biden's doing, I think I could do better than that. And so he jumps in with the thought of the thing that has made him successful over the course of his life is the resources that he has available to him. And in this particular case, he gets to that first debate and he gets creamed. So just imagine how much different it would have been had he gotten to that first debate and just blown everybody away.
Yeah.
Then he truly could have thrown a wrench in the bucket, mm-hmm. and we may be in a completely different situation right now. So actually, I don't think it's about anybody. I just think it was about his own ego.
Let's talk about the what you've said for months here. We've talked about, and we're seeing it now, the coalescing of the moderates.
Yes.
And then on the other side, with Elizabeth Warren's third place at her home state,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they're reassessing now. My gosh, yeah, I'd say you're reassessing.
They have reassessed. They already know what they're going to do. They're just waiting to tell everybody what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, so what I'm getting at is you pointed out early, and it has happened, mm-hmm. the coalescing of the Klobuchar campaign, the Buttigieg campaign, Bloomberg now all behind Biden, mm-hmm. the moderate side of it. Will there be a coming together between Warren and Sanders, folks?
My instinct is that that's probably what's being negotiated right now. And so let me put this in the Alabama context. Okay. I'm going to go back to the Senate campaign as well.
Okay.
So in the election that Senator Jones ultimately won, there were 8 Democratic candidates. I was the candidate that came in second, mm-hmm. of the 8. And as we got to the very end, from a national polling perspective, I was the only candidate who was polling nationally, and I was polling strong.
Right.
Well, when it was over, we hadn't even talked yet, and I endorsed him. I did it on air, mm-hmm. held an exclusive with Fox 10, and so now it's all on video, mm-hmm. right? So I didn't ask him for anything. Right. But at this point in time with Senator Warren and Senator Sanders, there's probably stuff going back and forth behind staffs, and people are trying to figure, mm-hmm. out what to give in order to get all that stuff ultimately aligned. That is what I believe is happening right now.
Because there seems to be this pretty strong animosity between supporters of Warren and supporters of Sanders. Will they be able to, not the campaigns themselves, but just the, mm-hmm. the folks, will they be able to come together? Because we're seeing it on the moderate side,
right?
But would we see it on the well, that's far the, left side?
But that's the thing with passion, right? And so tend to throw it back at you when we cross the aisle and we talk about the Tea Party Revolution,
right?
And you know what that did in terms of, there was a point in time when folks thought you were going to have a split in the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
Because of that. It's the folks on the end with the most passion are the folks who have the biggest challenge ultimately coming together.
That's true.
So I think that even if there is a deal made between the two candidates, for that to actually permeate through their supporters in this current election cycle, uh-huh. I think that's going to be a bit of a challenge.
How crucial do you think the timing of an endorsement is? We saw Buttigieg and Klobuchar endorse Biden the night before, right? Before Super Tuesday. If Warren comes out, we've got the next primaries coming up on March 10th. Would they prefer that if she were to endorse Sanders, that endorsement happens on March the 9th, the night before, just like we saw on Super Tuesday?
I think this situation was such an anomaly. As a general rule, just personally, I don't think endorsements matter a whole heck of a lot. But if you think of what happened with Vice President Biden and the timing of it, right? So he gets Representative Clyburn out of South Carolina.
That was big.
and the timing of that going into South Carolina. He wins South Carolina in an absolute landslide, every county, if memory serves me correctly. And then your two principal competitors immediately come out and endorse you as well. Do you know what I mean? And so the timing of that can't be recreated. Mm. Now, what you're alluding to that I think could potentially be problematic on the within the progressive wing is if you think about 2016. Now, all of us know that the Democratic National Committee was putting their thumb on the scale when it came to dealing with Secretary Clinton. Right, that's fairly clear. I don't think
anybody.
I'm glad
to hear you say, I didn't know where you're going to go with that because I was about to have to throw a flag and disagree.
But yeah, no, yeah. There's no doubt about that, right? And so
they
Senator
cooked the books for Clinton against Sanders.
I'm not sure that I would use cook the books.
Okay,
but within
pick the analogy.
Within the, we often talk about something being legal but not necessarily being right.
Right.
So what they were doing was in accordance with the rules, but the party is supposed to be neutral during the primary,
mm-hmm.
and it's clear that they were not neutral, right?
Right.
And so the point that I'm making is, so now Senator Sanders had every right to be irritated because of that, and so yes, he supported Secretary Clinton, but it wasn't like it was full-throated with passion the way that Senator Klobuchar told everybody in the state of Minnesota to vote for Vice President Biden.
Mm.
That's what I think the difference is, and the longer it is between today and the time that Senator Warren ultimately comes behind Senator Sanders, if in fact that's what she chooses to do, then that's going to hurt Senator Sanders.
Wait for us to hear the, well, I'm not endorsing. That'll be it's not full throw. What, are you endorsing? Well, I'm not endorsing.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be something like that. All right, coming right back. More with Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama. We'll talk about tomorrow night's show as well. And then one of these places that we end up at the same place, and it's fiscal issues.
Yes,
it's
yes,
waste.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fear of the coronavirus, but it's also what happens with $8.3 billion in funding on this. We'll be right back. Thanks, Kane. 823 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. You got junk, you need it gone. My buddy Trey makes it go away. 11 years he's been doing this in Mobile and Baldwin counties, and he's worked for us here at the station and at the house. His service is fantastic, and I was bragging about Trey during the news break there. One great thing, because you get used to services, right? If you have a service, they're going to give you some huge spectrum of time to show up. Doesn't work that way with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and they're going to set an appointment time with you that y'all both agree on a specific day in a specific hour. It's refreshing. And they show up. They quote you a price on the job. They look at it, quote you a price. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, continuing our conversation with Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama tomorrow night at 6. What's up?
Yes. So the two big topics this week, obviously, are the primary elections and coronavirus. So for the primary elections, we're going to have a conversation with Ben Harris, who is the chair of the Mobile County Democratic Executive Committee. We'll talk a little bit about the runoff between Dr. Kiani Gardner and Dr. JT Averhart. We're really, really excited about that. Additional shout out to Mr. Rick Collins. He ran a really good campaign, came in a distant third, but he did a great job. And then with coronavirus, we're going to have my older brother, Jeff Kennedy, who is the division chief for Homeland Security for the Austin, Texas Fire Department. So he is a career first responder, and under his Homeland Security responsibilities, he does what we would refer to as firefighting special operations. And his specific responsibility, or one of the areas of his specific responsibility, is the Austin Airport. So it's, what are you doing with coronavirus? And they're working through and developing contingency plans and stuff like that for how it is they actually deal with it there. So it'll be interesting to talk to him, just being in that space right now, to understand how organizations and governments are thinking about this.
And let's see, that could be one of the places that the $8.3 billion that they signed off on in Washington yesterday could be going to airport facilities.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about maybe $300 million thereabouts, or maybe it's $3 billion of it going to the vaccine. I have the number somewhere, but and then I heard yesterday, buying the vaccine at a fair price or mm-hmm. something like that.
Right.
Imagine that, you know, you can probably, when you deal in bulk, it's like Costco, you can probably get a good deal on the mm-hmm. vaccine. I don't know how you distribute it, though. You know, when you get it, do you then give it to the state agencies and they only get so much and they can apply? This starts the questions of a federal response. And it, right. this is one of the few places I'm not few places, but I'm not always, I by default, I worry about federal responses,
right?
Right. This is one of these places because what happens in one state is important to another state, important to another state. So I think there's a place for the federal government here. But I do worry about, I mean, that's a lot of, I know in Washington it's not, but to me, $8.3 billion is a lot of taxpayer dollars.
So two thoughts pop into my mind. The first one is the very first responsibility of the federal government is to keep us safe.
Yep.
And if you have something that is not limited in nature, like a specific disaster situation, like we were talking about Hurricane Katrina off
right.
camera, well, Hurricane Katrina not only impacted Louisiana, it impacted Mississippi and Alabama
right.
as well. But people are pretty proficient, and if you have some a lack of competence, it's fairly isolated what the impact is there. But in this particular situation, you can't have six different teams all thinking philosophically how to do something different. So you definitely need a coordinated federal response. Be that as it may.
Here's where Robert and I get together on this.
Be that as it may, one of the challenges that I've always had, particularly being on the Democratic side, is I'm passionate about fiscal responsibility. I want to know what the goal is. I want to know what the evaluation time frame is. I want to know what the success criteria is. And I really want to make sure that you don't have huge amounts of that $8+ billion going into somebody's pocket.
Yes. Or just, obviously, number one, right, somebody is defrauding or scamming, mm-hmm. taking it. Number two is just when it's not done with malice, but it's just wasted.
Yes.
Like, I see things in federal responses. I said, okay, I see where the person's, their heart was in it, but there was no brain.
Mm-hmm.
It was all heart and no brain. These are people worked very hard for the money that's
right.
taxed, that's going to be used here.
Mm-hmm.
You need to apply it. Get the problem solved, do the best we can, but don't just do something because I want to keep the people in this state happy or these
right.
people, you know, oh, well, you know, it's they've got a very strong congressional delegation, so I need poppycock,
you know? This is where I think having a system in place that maybe all the money doesn't go out at one time because, you know, you have
slow
appropriations
yes.
and then you have allocations.
Yes.
So maybe you slow down the allocations. At the end of the day, you want to make sure that people are safe. And I think particularly, here's an interesting tie into healthcare, as people who are avoiding going to see a healthcare provider because they don't have healthcare insurance. So in this situation, you don't want that to be the thing that causes the epidemic to become a pandemic.
Right.
So you definitely need to put some money there that allows people to get tested in some environment that's potentially safe.
And have these vaccines. I agree with you right. there. I think, you know, because let's just look at it fiscally.
Mm-hmm.
We're money ahead as a country. If we pay for the vaccines for people who wouldn't get them, right?
Right.
If they pray to God, get a vaccine here, and we're money ahead to have people go get that shot, pay whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're trying to get the best deal. It's $20, it's $30, whatever for
right.
each vaccine. The value to our economy, $30 to get that vaccine is way cheaper than what it has to have that person out of the workforce for 2 weeks or 3 weeks and then spread that disease on down the line.
Well, no doubt. And then picking up on the person, I would even rather have them out of the workforce for 2 weeks or 3 weeks getting better.
Right.
Vaccines obviously better than recovery.
Yeah, let's get ahead of it, right?
Than to have the person because they don't have health insurance and they happen to be working, for example, in the fast food industry, now you're going to work and then
yep.
you run the risk of spreading it more.
Yep. So we're both on the same page on this
we are.
One. Want to get the response right, but, you know, and it's our job as voters and citizens to say, hey, we're glad you're doing this if you agree with that, but we're watching and they're, don't waste this.
Absolutely. And it's the same thing that comes up in every single natural disaster is that people are good-natured. And
yep.
whenever we have times of tragedy, we come together. But there are always people out there that are scammers as well. And so we're watching federal government. We're going to hold you accountable.
Maybe we put the scammers and the fraudsters in stocks, like in the old days.
Yes.
You know, have them where we could, like, put them there at the cannon, at the loop, and you could drive by and see them. Like, these are
making
the people.
Make it a touristy thing.
Yeah. You think something good. All right. Kennedy for Alabama, tomorrow night at 6. Thank you, man.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Coming right back. More Mobile Mornings.
All right. right, 837 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
All right, Don. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, good morning. We're at the start of a new month, and I understand you have some great deals over there at McConnell. Tell us about them.
Well, one of the cool things we've been talking about, Dalton, is these Mardi Gras trucks that pulled the floats for the parades in Mobile, and we're so proud of them. But, you know, we started off with over 30 of them. I think we're down to 15, and so by my math, half of them are gone. So, you know, they're the nicest ones out there. People go to our website, McConnellAutomotive.com, and check them out. But one of my other favorite things is just 0% for 72 months. And if people do a little bit of math on that too, Dalton, there's nowhere to go lower than 0%. So if somebody's driving a nice truck, they don't maybe love it, and they're paying some interest, 5, 6, 7, 8%, then trade it in and get zero at McConnell. And we've got one last favorite thing, the little Encore SUV by Buick. We have 8 of them left, Dalton, and those things sticker for about $26,000 or $7,000. And we've got them marked down on our website at $18,900. And when they're gone, buddy. So these are the kind of things that usually you wait to the end of the month. But the early start to the month at McConnell is just a perfect time to come get a vehicle.
That's some good stuff. Thank you, Mitch.
Y'all have a great one, Dalton.
You too. That's Mitch McConnell. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, or check him out online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Right, 8:38, and time to talk some Lanyap and pinch hitting today for Rob Hulbert, who I think, well, we'll check if it's true or not, that he has full-blown coronavirus.
I'm not sure.
We'll check in with Jason Johnson from Lanyap to find out more about that. Hey, Jason.
Hey, yes, I can confirm Rob has a mild fever, a light cough, and in general, slept late this morning.
can y'all get him quarantined? Can you quarantine him at the house?
No one talks to Rob anyway here, so kind of a self-actualizing quarantine.
He's self-quarantined.
He's actually at the mayor's breakfast event. He's working.
All right, I have a little trouble hearing you on the phone there.
Just
increase the volume on the jitterbug there.
Sure.
Okay, great. Yeah, ooh. So I want to talk about, first of all, the cover of the new Lanyap and Project Access. This is a story that you and Dale did. Talk about this.
Yeah, sure. Well, it is not, which, by the way, is that better volume-wise at all?
It's incredibly better.
Okay. So it's not the most fun story to work on. It's actually about the city's efforts over the past few months to do a better job addressing domestic violence within the city. And that was kind of a comprehensive overhaul of, you know, from what they do with police on the street that respond to calls, to what they do in local courts, to how they work with these community organizations that work with women and men in some situations that are victims in these cases. And I can go into some details if you want, but
sure.
It was a really kind of a comprehensive thing that I don't even know if they were ready to talk about publicly just yet, but they there were two pretty high-profile incidents over the last 2 weeks that kind of made them want to let the public know, hey, this is something we want to address.
Well, and we're talking about this. I know it's, you know, Women's History Women's Month, obviously for timing, but this is something that, you know, it's every day, every month of the year. It's an issue, I'm sure, around the country, but right here at home, what are we doing to address this?
Well, I mean, obviously, taking allegations and calls seriously, you know, it kind of starts with the officer who shows up. And one of the things that they told me as far as just making it a comprehensive approach, in Alabama, after your third domestic violence conviction, that's a misdemeanor, the state, you'll basically be put in state court and it'll be treated as a felony offense. And so what was happening in some cases, and they didn't articulate specific instances, but essentially a cop on the street that's just doing a beat job that's going from call to call doesn't necessarily know everything that the court clerk knows. So they were trying to do a better job of having the police be able to instantly know, okay, well, this is this guy's third offense. You know, in that type of information sharing, kind of the left hand talking to the right, making sure that's happening in every instance. And one of the other things they were doing was working with agencies like Lifelines Counseling, mm-hmm. and Penelope House. Because, I mean, as you can imagine, coming forward, accusing a husband, boyfriend, or girlfriend, or whoever it is, of domestic violence, it's hard for a lot of people to do, number one, out of fear, but also, I mean, you're talking about you know, tearing a household apart in some cases, it's very difficult. And to have someone that's trained and has done this, that is there from the jump with these people, you know, is a little bit more palatable sometimes than maybe every single cop that you work with immediately. You know, so they're really doing to basically bring all these resources to the table and get them to victims as soon as possible.
All right, so that is a cover story and obviously a full in-depth reporting on that in the new Land app. Let's talk about it. I also want to talk a little bit about, because we've talked for the last month and a half, 2 months, about coronavirus and COVID-19. You have a story in the new Land app about locally the response for COVID-19. What's the takeaway there? Are we ready?
I think as ready as anybody. You know, a lot of your health department folks are really kind of taking their marching orders from the CDC, which, you know, if you've seen the national news, there's criticism there, but I mean, it's also, they're doing as much as you can do when something like this has progressed as quickly as it can. But from the city's perspective, it's pretty interesting what they've done. They have a guy, Joseph Snowden, who's essentially over maritime issues for the city. He's a retired Coast Guard captain. And so he was kind of telling me some of the ways they've addressed the additional risk we have because we have a cruise ship and a port. You know, we have a lot of influx from all over the world there. And, you know, he kind of actually put my fears at bay a little bit, just talking about some of the processes that they go through. I mean, essentially, they're hosing down the terminal there with hand sanitizer every hour on the hour, effectively. Pretty much any time a group goes out or is going to come in, they're sanitizing, trying to limit some of that contact as much as possible. And then in terms of your vessels bringing in goods from overseas, you know, we have bar pilots, and he kind of reminded me of that if there's a sick person, they're required by law to inform the Coast Guard, and if you're wheezing at the wheel, they're going to stop you in the bay and send someone out there to get you to the hospital and not just let you waltz on down to Water Street.
Yeah, Jason, the shipping industry was the first thing I thought about, but in your article, you also mentioned students at local colleges that have gone overseas and what they're doing to kind of prevent anything from happening.
Yeah, this is Spring Hill College has a campus in Bologna, Italy, and Italy is one of the countries that's probably, I think, in the top four in terms of cases that are confirmed. It's the highest in Europe, and I think the last I read, there was only one confirmed case in the city of Bologna, but just as a precaution, the university wanted to bring, like several universities have done, you've seen, you had, I think Auburn had students in South Korea or something like that, and I think Alabama had some too, but they're bringing these people back just to keep their folks safe and to make sure that they're not going to be the ones spreading the virus. I mean, there's no reason to believe that any of these students were exposed. I mean, Bologna is a large city, but, you know, like I said, it's more of a safety precaution. I will say, though, one of my favorite things about that story is that I think one of the news stations had something about COVID-19 concerns in Bologna, and I was like, there are going to be people here who think the bologna
that's right.
Contaminated.
You know? So are we hearing, we're hearing directly from Jason Johnson from Land App that bologna is a vessel for the coronavirus.
I can't confirm to you that Oscar Mayer is stricken with COVID-19.
But, you know, you talk about these two sides of this. I think it's worth saying, when you say, hey, college kids, you can't go to these places, or hey, tourists, we don't want you going and coming back from this or that. That's one thing. But you look at our city, and what we started off talking about, you know, the port, which needs to run. It needs to run. There's so many jobs that are tied to that. And you look at the cruise ship, you know, we can't just say, we can't give Carnival some reason to go somewhere else. That's a tough place. That's business. You know, that's money. That's when you look at the questions to the economy about coronavirus. If you did shut those down, that's the kind of stuff that I think panicked Wall Street last week.
Oh yeah, I mean it's one of those things, and you kind of have to balance of being prepared and then being overly dramatic. Maybe that's not the proper term.
No, but, I think
you, know,
I think
you don't want to panic when there's no reason to panic, but you definitely want to be ready. And I guess that's one of the things that's interesting about just the shipping industry is that by its very nature, you know, whether it's the fire ant or some bug on board a ship that you know is now an invasive species, they're very particular about who comes in here and when. And it is, you know, for the layman who's not out there on a boat, and me, until I actually interviewed some of the people that work out there, it just seems like a boat rolls up, throws the boxes off, and goes out. But I mean, there's a lot to it. They don't just you don't just roll up into a major port and then get out and walk around.
Okay. Can you hold on? We've got to run the news break. Can you hold on a second here?
Yeah, sure.
All right, coming right back. More with Jason Johnson from Lanyap and lanyapmobile.com. Remember, the new copy out now. FM, he'll tell you where you can get those and also where you can get the online edition, how you can do that. Be right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. We'll get right back in our conversation with Jason Johnson from Lanyap. But give me a second here. Tell you what it was like yesterday, strolling up into the Sullivan house and having the maids having just left. What an effect. What a change it is when the maids come to our house.
Did you take a big, deep breath of the clean air?
I do. And I do, I love the maids. We've been using them since October now, and you can get a free estimate from them at 344-6626. I love the clean that they leave behind, but also the fact that the 2 or 3 hours a week that you spend sweeping and dusting and vacuuming and all that stuff to get the house just straight, that's back in your schedule. Use it for more work, more family time, more hauling my children to umpteen activities. Whatever it is, you get the time back in your life, and you give yourself the gift of clean and the gift of time with the maids. I want you to check out what I've been talking about. When you get their free estimate, have them come out, look at your place, see what they can do for you. Once again, free estimate is easy as picking up the phone and calling 344-6626 for the maids, right? 344-6626 for the maids, or just Google the maids for Mobile and Baldwin counties. All right, Jason, new Lanyap's out now. Where could one find a copy of the new Lanyap?
We have them at physical copies for free, of course, at several locations throughout Mobile, Baldwin County. You can also look at our website, which we do have a subscription for articles, but the main page is free as it can be. You have a list of where every single stand is in, throughout both counties. You can find them there. And if you are frequenting a business where there's not one, call us, and we will force them to put one there.
Excellent. I love that. I love the dictate. All right, let's talk a bit about Tuesday as well, and it is runoff time. No big surprise for those of us who've watched this, but now they've got 26 more days here before we're back to the polls.
Yes, I'm just preparing for the automated text messages to ramp up. But fortunately, Bloomberg's out of the presidential race, so that's one less late night text I'm getting from someone, I guess. I would say anybody that observes politics, relatively closely, knew that at least a couple of these were going to go to a runoff, and I was actually, I guess the candidate's right. We always do a pool before these races to see who we think's going to come out on top. So. Yeah. Be interesting, and
wait a second.
With
so,
some of these,
you won it there at the at Lanyap.
Well, actually, I tied with a couple of folks. I think we all were. We all had Jerry getting the most votes in AL1, and then we figured Bill Hightower would be a contender and probably force some type of a runoff as he has. So.
You know, on the Senate side, Jason, and we've talked about this a bunch Tuesday and then since, but looking at the vote percentage for Bradley Byrne in Mobile and Baldwin County, we're looking at, I think, 52% and 56%. I think Mobile County 52% or 56%, somewhere thereabouts in Baldwin County. If you are Jeff Sessions right now, you got to get those people back. You got to get them back to the polls on the 31st. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that, but if he does... That's pretty big, because I think Tuberville, 10% in Mobile, 12% in Baldwin County?
Yeah, but I don't necessarily think that would be a huge challenge. I mean, it really depends.
Are they coming out? I think if they come out, but do they come back? Yeah. I mean, you know what I'm saying? When your candidate, and this is just like a soft science question, if your candidate doesn't win the primary, do you come back out for a runoff when your candidate's not on the ballot?
I guess it depends on how much you don't like one of the candidates.
True.
I guess really, I hate to say it, but sometimes I think negative is more of a motivator for some people. And I think there are people that support Tuberville because of his stance and his position. But as you've mentioned, there's not a lot of difference in the messaging during this race. It was kind of, I love Trump the most, that kind of thing. But if you're one of those people that, supports Tuberville because he's not a politician, there's the counter side of that is people that support Byrne and Sessions because they are experienced. And I guess if you're concerned about that, then, maybe even though Bradley's not in it, you would come back out and support Sessions for the same reasons. But, again, this is a complicated thing with the especially with Sessions. He's kind of a polarizing figure because of his history with the president and how that's played into this race.
We'll see what's changed. When President Trump came in and campaigned for Luther Strange, it didn't help him. Or it didn't help him enough.
On top of that, he finally, I guess, broke his silence about this race.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That retweet.
Yes. So he started yesterday with the tweeting about this. I just don't know how much that influences people's vote or not. I really don't. I think it's something we all think makes a big difference. I don't know if it does. To what degree? Well, people may agree with it, but still say, "Hey, I appreciate the president's text, but or tweet, but I'm still going to vote the way I'm going to vote."
Well, I think if you hang on the president's every word as the gospel, then you probably already weren't voting for Jeff Sessions. That would be my take. Now, if there's a constant hammer, if he's tweeting every morning, 5-6 tweets in a row, maybe that grinds somebody down. Especially if Sessions were to respond, but I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's proven that he's going to keep supporting the president and stay that course. But, like I said, I just think that if you're that person that the tweet from the president is going to make you not vote for Sessions, I think it's already worked.
Good point. Jason, appreciate your time. We'll get you back soon.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Britton.
All right, Jason Johnson checking in from Landnap, landnapmobile.com. One thing that I just want to offer here to think about on the Senate side is that Senator Shelby is going to, if it's not this next cycle, be the cycle. I don't know anything for a fact, but mm-hmm. I got to feel like we're not long for Shelby in the Senate.
Just because of his age.
Yeah. And so we're looking at a situation where we go from, remember when it was Sessions and Shelby, we had, I think, the most senior Senate delegation in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
For a state like Alabama, has 7 congressional seats right now on the House side. Maybe we end up with 6 here after this census. The Senate is where we have a puncher's chance, right? That's the only place we have the equal footing against bigger states out there. I think it behooves us, whatever decision we make, to try to figure out how we're going to start building seniority in the Senate and people who can get things done. Because, y'all, we're not going to get it done in the House. We're going to have to get it done in the Senate. All right. See you in 3.